Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I am Tyler Bishop and joined alongside me once again, Anthony Moore. Anthony, welcome back.
Great to be here again.
Yeah, it's nice. It's kind of fun, you know, going back and forth with having Whitney on the show and then having you as well. This was sort of the original idea behind The Publisher Lab. For those that don't know, and for those that are maybe longtime listeners that used to listen when we started the podcast a couple years ago, the idea was that we have so many experts here in our building where we work that we wanted to try to just sort of like round table some of the different folks and talk about things and content. And so I really enjoy sort of like getting different perspectives. And you obviously have like a long, long background in sort of like content especially. So it's really interesting to sort of hear the way you think about some of this stuff. So yeah, it's been a fun experience. Hopefully you've picked some things up on the show too. Anything interesting kind of pop up in the last couple that sticks out to you?
I do. I mean, there's so much going on with AI right now. Just a swirling vortex of updates and, you know, progress. And as a, you know, content creator and like a writer, I would want to go do a podcast like this to see stuff I don't know about for someone like you with your background of actually working and like managing a lot of this. So there's just so many updates. Seems like every day, every week that I wouldn't know. And there's like 50 different sources of information. So I would just go to Tyler and ask him what's up.
Well, what's fun for me right now is trying to figure out. So like, I really like talking to publishers and people that run sites, listeners, for example. This is why I love the questions so much that we get for the show, is because I like kind of tapping into with everything that's happening and going on, and even some of the tools that are emerging. Like, what is it from a publisher perspective that, you know, like, what are the ideas that you have, or I guess, like, what are the, you know, the things that you would like to accomplish or the concerns that you have? Because there's probably some, like, something that's emerging or some, like, there's something that can be done about that I have information about, but I don't really know, you know, like, sort of the creative mind of, like, what is it that we want to create right now? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, a lot of publishers want to use AI, and it can certainly do writing. But it can do a lot more than that too. Yeah. And I think sort of like, that's what is kind of interesting to me right now, is trying to figure out how do you use it to create all the ideas that you maybe imagine a lot of times, but you're like, that would take forever, or I have no idea how to do that, you know?
Yeah. For any video game players, I'm playing the new Zelda game that just came out, and then the whole world in the game is just, you can kind of do anything you want. You can like make spaceships and rockets, and there's like all these like physics in the game. And I was just like moving little rocks here and there, you know, like I feel like I was like playing checkers, and I would like go online and see like people are making actual like massive creations. Yeah. And combining things. And it's like, I think that's what AI is. They're like, oh, I can just like write a paragraph or like my like blog, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, no, you can, it's really just limited by your imagination what you can do.
Yeah.
And it's helpful to kind of just get some more ideas. Like, oh, I had no idea it can go beyond just like writing a meta description or making headlines. Like, no, it can code websites. It's crazy. So I want to hear more about what that is beyond just the like basic 101. It can write stuff for you, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's what's interesting to me now too. And where I think the next sort of like, I've likened it before to like, you remember when email came out, it's, you know, everybody was like sending pictures to each other, like sending messages. And it's like, you use it in this such novel way. And we're all so impressed by so little. But now it's like, you know, you get these complex marketing automation systems, you send, you know, thousands of emails in a day or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think the next phase of AI that'll become really interesting in functional publishers is the ability for it to like take just disparate pieces of information or ideas or tasks, and then just immediately output something that, you know, would take a human a really, really long time. I think right now, one of the things that's so impressive to everybody is that it can, you know, you can clone a person, you can kind of deep fake them, you can change your voice, it can produce this like original article written in the voice of, you know, Walt Whitman or whatever. And I think we're impressed by that because it would take a person so long to do those things like the editing or the writing. But, you know, realistically, it's just a time thing where it's like it's able to do that really fast. And if you can kind of get past the sort of like the time span of like, well, human can do that too. You know, you start thinking about like, well, I'd love to have a website that is about this topic that I've, you know, have expertise on or whatever. Well, if there's somewhere in your phone, in your life, and whatever, where you could take pictures, like upload whatever, all that knowledge somehow, and then just say like, look, machine, here's files, here's access to these accounts and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I want you to make a website that looks like this and populate it with this content and the knowledge that I have. And I want it to be in short form blogs, and I want it to be across 100 blogs. Oh, and I want it to be SEO optimized, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it just, you get that in, you know, less than 30 minutes. Whew. You know,
yeah.
I think for people, they think of that as scary. And I kind of think of it as like, it allows great content and people that have expertise to like actually get that out there faster. Like, why would you have to wait a year to like build this thing up? I know that the work and, you know, the hard work aspect of it is kind of important from a focus standpoint, but at the same time, you know, like the information is there now. It's in, you have it everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I went back to my college a couple of times to like talk to like the like younger English students how to be like a writer, you know. And I would tell them like I was writing 2, maybe 3, like 3,000 word posts a week. That's it, you know. And now it's like I wouldn't know what to tell them. It's like a whole different game now.
Yeah.
And like you can do that in like minutes. And I mean, speaking of AI, we can kind of touch more about that. So ChatGPT has kind of taken the world by storm since January of 2023 when it first came out. A lot of people are using it, but it's limited in a lot of ways. You know, it's still only using data up to September 2021, can create images, can still kind of be wonky. And like, it's still, you know, still in its kind of like early days. And I saw some whole article saying how it was explaining how elephants lay eggs. And it was very convinced that was true. It's like, so, you know, it's like not quite there.
In fairness, I can't say from my experience that I know whether or not that's true.
It's definitely not true. Look it up. Kind of weird though. But so in the meantime, Google has recognized ChatGPT as a pretty big threat to its, you know, growing search algorithm and like people using ChatGPT and AI to find answers, just like they would on like TikTok or Reddit or other ways besides Google. And so they're rolling out big changes to Google Bard. And so so is Bing and their AI model chat, Bing Chat. And so just this past week, last week, Google had their big I/O annual conference talking about these updates. Yeah. And it seems like Google Bard can be positioned to really do a lot more things than ChatGPT can't do. Google, obviously, everyone uses Google. They have, you know, several tools and products that billions of people use. Google Photos, Google Maps, Google, you know, Gmail. And they can integrate Bard, the AI, into that and make it much easier to write, you know, emails and edit photos, whatnot. So I'd be curious to hear what you think about this, Tyler. And this kind of like, you know, there's like the streaming wars. There's like Netflix, Hulu, HBO, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now there's like this kind of weird AI wars where Google, they're slower to the take, but they have more to offer. What do you kind of see the next few months looking like where Google and Bing, who can do things like image generation, they might have more accurate information. Yeah. It's more seamlessly integrated into tools people already use. Can ChatGPT kind of keep up with that? And what should publishers know about what AI tool they should focus on for the next few months?
Yeah, because one of the things, and this speaks directly to the thing that I was talking about earlier about having like these multiple layers of like being able to have ChatGPT, you know, take a file of yours and you know, like even just giving it a, you know, access to like maybe if you were, you know, hard coding your own website, just taking the core folder, uploading it, or, you know, taking your entire WordPress site and being like, why is my image broken? You know, like, why are all my images breaking or whatever? And it can look at all of that and figure out like why, you know. And right now, you know, like with ChatGPT, you'd have to know what questions to ask it and what information to feed it piece by piece to get that back. I know that this week they're rolling out plugins for ChatGPT, which should make a lot of these types of things a little bit easier. So like the ability to give it data to train on and different things like that. Bard is sort of like kind of having this built in already, but if you go and you explore around, there's so many tools that are sort of like, you know, I've seen one describe itself yesterday as like ChatGPT with superpowers, and it's like there's all these sort of like you can kind of think of it like how Salesforce built their business a long time ago. Salesforce became a best of breed CRM, but there are thousands of like software companies that basically built little companies on the top of Salesforce. They made these Salesforce plugins, right. You can call them, or apps for the Salesforce store. And it's like, you know, for if you're an event manager, you could buy a, you know, extension or plugin or app for Salesforce that basically converts the CRM instantly into something that works better for like an event based business for like booking a venue or whatever.
More niche stuff.
Yeah. And I think that that's what we're starting to see, where it's like these, you know, sort of like the Googles and the ChatGPTs of the world, there'll be these engines that sort of like underlie something, almost like, you know, is a website built in PHP or is it built in JavaScript? You know, or maybe like a like example that's a little bit more like familiar for a lot of folks in our audience. It's like, you know, like a Microsoft or Google Office suite, where it's like, you know, are you using Gmail or are you using Outlook? They both do the same thing. You know, they don't necessarily work. You don't really need both of them. But if you want, like realistically, it's like all these other things kind of live on top of it. So yeah, I would actually say that like Bard and ChatGPT on their own will probably not be the tools themselves that that people end up using. But yeah, I think there's something called Databerry that to me I've already found to be a better fit for certain tasks, like giving it your own data to train on, where it's like, you have all the benefits of ChatGPT, but now you upload a spreadsheet with, you know, all your product inventory in it. And then you can say like, hey, ChatGPT, you know, can you return information when the user asks about, is something in stock? And now you have, you know, a retail sales associate that knows about all your, you know, stock information or your product stock information in real time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways, and we're still figuring all this out. There's been multiple meetings this week, in the past couple of weeks, with Congress across the world and the White House and the Senate about regulations on this, like how to actually measure this and like what's possible. So there's a lot of different possibilities there. And so kind of talk more about AI and how that combines with the day-to-day tasks publishers do of writing, SEO, managing websites. There's a lot that you can pair AI with that publishers might not really know. And let's talk about social media here for a little bit. And we're going to end up on some ad rate information. But social media, there's a lot of changes happening there. There's a rise of TikTok, which is still like, is it going to be banned in America? We don't know. In the meantime, the kind of tried and true staples like Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn, they're experiencing some interesting growth recently. And what we're going to talk about today is that Facebook has long been this source of traffic and referral, and there's so much activity you can build as a publisher in your communities, on your pages, whatnot.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of downturn from Facebook. I mean, Meta's been heavily investing in their virtual world. Hasn't really gone that well. There's been like lots of declines across the board. And even think about a couple weeks ago, BuzzFeed News, this massive news organization, had to close their doors because they were just getting so little information from their social media platforms like Facebook. There's been huge declines in referrals and traffic, and things are changing, especially for news publishers and content creators. And other platforms like LinkedIn have appeared to just kind of in this like slow and steady platform where communities can thrive without a lot of the kind of messiness that Facebook has. So when it comes to a platform like LinkedIn, and we're seeing that, you know, 60% of LinkedIn users are between 25 and 34, that demographic is willing to pay and really consume a lot of content, a lot of information from, you know, dozens of different topics. A lot of adults use LinkedIn, you know, places like TikTok are huge activity, you know, hubs, but that's mostly younger folks.
Yeah.
When it comes to a lot of publishers, bread and butter readers who are adults who are looking for information and different kinds of content, they're seeing a lot of possibility on LinkedIn. So do you have any thoughts on how publishers could maybe switch their communities and maybe choose to invest in a new platform like LinkedIn where they can get higher potential for referral traffic, for different ad spend and publishers and different advertisers going to these platforms to then bring that back to their own websites?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the platform is always going to be a little bit specific to the type of content that you have, and you know, our listeners will kind of know this. It's like, you know, LinkedIn is probably not going to be a great platform if all your content is on, I don't know, trying to think, because it's pretty broad, but paintball,
yeah,
say, or something like that, you know?
Not everything works on LinkedIn.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. The resurgence in LinkedIn is a bit of a surprise to me from the standpoint of, I kind of had felt like, and I still think this, it is almost more of a platform built around sort of like advertising, recruiting, and also like professional sort of like outreach sales. But like, you know, something there is, it's like, there's enough there for lots of interested parties for commerce to occur. So like nobody wants to go on a platform where you're going to get nothing but sales outreach and advertising, you know? But there's enough there to where it's like, as an executive, you maybe want to go on there to recruit people for your company. So, you know, you're dealing with sales outreach, but at the same time you are using that platform. So there's, it brings enough to the table there. So you have to kind of take that dynamic into account. I think if you're a publisher to where you're like looking at the paradigm for my niche or my category of content on LinkedIn, is there a type of content that I can create that's going to like, you know, I can draw in one of these audiences or something like that. I think it's going to be hard just to kind of like use it almost as broadly as something like Facebook, where you used to be able to just create a page and post your content and you could niche your audience from there. I think the thing that we've learned is that, you know, short form video is something that's, I mean, it's exploding. So something like a TikTok, even the YouTube clips and things like that, I think, you know, there's never been a better time to sort of start converting your content and growing on those platforms that way. I mean, like TikTok is like, it's the default. I think it's the majority of people that are Gen Z or I forget what the exact stat was. We brought it up on the show, but like TikTok is used over Google as a search engine for a huge portion of the younger population. And then I think you have things like Pinterest where, you know, I think I'm surprised all the time because I still don't know how Pinterest really works.
Yeah, I know. It's like, been like 12 years.
I've never been able to grow traffic on it. I'm not a user of it though. So it's always a difficult one for me. But I've seen publishers get significant amounts of traffic from Pinterest.
With the right content.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Lyndon.
And we're on the marketing team here at Azoic.
Can't figure out why your website's loading so slowly?
Leap is a tool that analyzes your website's Core Web Vitals based on Google's Lighthouse standards.
It also recommends optimizations based on any issues that it discovers on your website.
Try Leap today, absolutely for free, with an Azoic account and speed up your website.
Well, speaking of that, so with all this new AI development stuff, like plugins for ChatGPT this week, Google Bard integrating, you know, Google Photos and Google Videos, and you can edit things much faster and much more seamlessly. How do you think publishers could maybe use AI to create different kinds of content faster or better or differently that can grow their communities on these new platforms like LinkedIn or whatnot?
Yeah, so this actually leads itself into one of the questions that I think we got from the show. So thank you to our listener that sent in the question asking about Markdown last week. So I talked a little bit about Markdown content and saying that, you know, if you had a site, one of the things that I would take into account right now is that with the world headed to where it is and maybe hedging against even search engines themselves being a way that people get content and information, you know, assuming that you create something new and you don't have access to thousands or you don't even know where to go get, you know, maybe, you know, your niche audience, you know where some of them are, but you're like, I want people to discover me. And you there's a theoretical or hypothetical scenario where, and I think it's inevitable to some degree, that search engines, we think of them today, will not be the place that occurs. So how do you get your content discovered? And I think one of the ways is to consider the idea that I was talking about with Markdown last week is making all of your content, quote unquote, headless. And I don't mean this from a go set up a headless CMS or something like that. I think the particular question we got was, somebody said, you know, would I implement a Markdown strategy on my WordPress site? So a good example would be is if you were to take one of your WordPress articles or even an export of your, you know, like WordPress post or whatever, you go into WordPress settings, go to export, and you take that XML file or you even just, you know, right click on your article from the browser and go view source and copy that entire page. You could feed it into something like a ChatGPT, just to give you an example of this, and say, can you convert the content here, categorize it, and output it as JSON or what's called YAML, Y-A-M-L. And what you're going to find is that it'll basically take that and it'll say, it'll like basically give you an output of a, what looks like almost like an outline of bullets, but there'll be brackets, so it'll be code. And it's JSON, and it'll say like title this, category this, author this, you know, date this. And then you've got all the different parts of your content all the way down, like your H2 headings, all that kind of stuff. So that stuff all exists now. You can think of that kind of like how schema works. But then you start to have these other things that you can start to convert into your content. So you could take that exact information and then you could say, all right, well, not everyone is going to want the article version of this. So can you summarize this for a tweet? Can you summarize this for 250 characters or less?
Right.
Can you take this content and create image sizes that fit every major social platform that fit? And what I imagine is going to happen is that if you have your content this way, whatever emerges, so you may have these ChatGPT plugins that actually pull in like what we think of as a search result or Bard. And Bard may have these completely different sort of like, you know, we know how Google has always been with SEO where they're like, you know, meta description is this long, title tag's this long, and then they change it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, have a header image that's this size if you want to appear in Google Discover. And then you've got to go back into all your articles and you've got to change out your image sizes and stuff. Being able to have your content already in a markdown format, you could say, all right, well, now I need summaries that are this many characters long for all my articles. And you want to, what you want to do is basically have a category for that, that you could basically convert to a, you know, JSON or something like that, to where it's like all your articles now have a Bard plugin summary or a ChatGPT, you know, Amazon or even Slack, you know, information summary to it or something like that. And that allows you basically to take any of your content and then convert it into, you know, like basically like compartmental or sort of containerized, you know, perfect fits for all these different, you know, emerging things. And you can think of that as like having even a thumbnail image that's cropped properly for every sort of, you know, format on social media today, because it actually, that would be a smart thing to do. So if you had a WordPress site, one of the best ways to do it is you can think of this as advanced custom fields. So you can implement this. There's a bunch of plugins for it. But then whenever you have an article, you can add an advanced custom field and you could say, you know, Facebook header image size. So on all your posts now, you could use a ChatGPT or a Midjourney or something like that when you finish writing it, or you could bulk upload, you know, all your existing ones and say, give me a cropped version of this thumbnail, or, you know, generate new thumbnails that are this size. And then in that advanced custom field, you know, area of your WordPress post, you could just go in and upload all of those so that now all your posts have the, you know, Facebook crop size or whatever it is. And now you've got basically like all these other, you know, elements to your content that maybe you don't see on the page, but if you're something that's crawling it or connecting with your site, it can pull out that information so that it fits the format that, you know, their platform maybe is delivering to a user.
Yeah. Well, I'm hearing a lot of chess, and I think a lot of publishers are still stuck on the checkers part of this. There's so much you can do with this, as long as you're kind of thinking ahead. And if you go to our blog, we have lots of articles about this written by me, by Tyler, by more of our AI people here at Ezoic, because there's just so much you can do with this. And to kind of end this conversation here, there's so much going on. There's so much progress to be had, so much potential, so much so we don't even know what's happening. I mean, Congress is still just trying to keep up with this crazy flood of progress. In the meantime, behind all of this, ad spend has continued to rise. And we're going to see, we're projected to have even more records broken this year in 2023. Just a couple of numbers for a year. Digital video advertising spend increased 21% last year to almost $50 billion. And this year in 2023 is projected to rise 17% up to $55 billion. And that's just video. There's so much more going on. And interestingly, a lot of video advertising buyers, people who are actually paying for these ads, they are using the same metrics to kind of gauge creators, like publishers, that they would Hollywood, quote unquote, produce video.
Yeah,
right?
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, they're like really seeing them as equals. So what that tells me, Tyler, is that there's so much potential for publishers who can get this right. If they're positioning themselves and their sites correctly, they can be seen the likes of like a studio or like professionally created content and communities, they can be also seen like that by advertisers. So talking about all this potential for ad revenue, and there's money flowing into these communities more and more this year, what are some just lasting thoughts that you can give publishers on how to position themselves to really get as much of that revenue as possible in terms of using AI and using the right social media platforms and just kind of knowing how to use these tools in ways that people didn't use even 3 months ago? How can they do that now?
Yeah. So our longtime listeners will know I'm a big fan of the universal theory of expanding and contracting, which means that we're always in either a period of things in general, as broadly as you can define it, decoupling or sort of like conglomerating, right? Mm. And it's not always one thing, meaning like we're not always seeing all things decoupling and all, and you know, everything else compartmentalizes or whatever. When it comes to video, we're seeing massive decoupling right now. And, you know, I think for a minute, we probably wondered whether or not that would continue. So you can think about this in terms of like wire cutting, right? You know, people not doing cable and just, mm-hmm. you know, you've got the streaming platforms and all that kind of stuff. But that started to feel kind of disparate. You've got a billion subscriptions. It's like, I have a subscription to Paramount Plus and I don't know why, you know, like, I couldn't tell you what's on Paramount Plus. And I think the question then was like, well, is somebody going to come along and bundle these things or something mm-hmm. like that? But we're almost seeing the opposite where it's like we almost can't go back because like what you said is, you know, they're being graded, you know, YouTubers. I spend a lot of time on YouTube, even watching on my television now. And this is not genie back in the bottle, even with writer strike and things like that going in Hollywood. If you really think about it, think about the amount of money, dollars, industry, business that's attached to quote unquote Hollywood mm-hmm. or consolidating New York, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really make sense for this sort of like industry to operate off of a very like opaque sort of process, right? Where everything is consolidated in these two sort of areas where they operate kind of like outside of reality in some respects. Mm. And so what you're seeing now is basically power being lost in those areas as being like sort of gatekeepers for, you know, where content creators and producers and directors and all that kind of stuff have to go to basically like generate something that goes out to the world because the distribution is no longer like basically run through there. It's just not this bottleneck anymore. And so I think we'll continue to see that. And so if you're a publisher, whether you like it or not, you can't ignore video. And I'll implore anybody that's watching this, if you haven't tried exploring something with video yet, you need to try because this is where the growth is. This is where realistically the opportunity is. And with something like AI, we're not far away from, if you like to write, you can write a video, you know, this is very close.
Just plug it in.
Yeah. I mean, I think with something like Flickify, we're starting to see that, you know, this is getting really good. I think the V2 of that is going to be really unbelievable. Having been able to play with it and things like that, I did a deep fake of myself last night. It'd be fun. And so I think the big thing with that is that, I would start exploring that, getting onto those platforms and trying to grow there. But I think if you're a publisher, it's really the opportunity is within video and being able to sort of like tap into audiences that want your content, on multiple platforms. Because ultimately, I think we're going to have a situation where it's like you can't rely on Google search anymore. But that doesn't mean that people won't still try to find content. And if you make good content for people, eventually they won't need to discover you. They'll just come to you.
Yeah. Well, we could talk all day about that. I think we're going to end here. In the meantime, anybody who wants to talk more about this, we're having lots of blogs and videos and updates on our Ezoic blog that talks all about this. We're doing a Publisher Lab every single week with all these important updates for everything going on and flying around every week with AI and content and ad rates. In the meantime, thank you for joining us today. Tyler Bitcher, thanks for having me, buddy.
I'll see you all. It's always fun.
Next week, where I'm talking with someone else from here from Ezoic.